Hello and welcome to the Friday, September 12th, 2014 edition of the Sands and its Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and today I'm recording from Augusta, Georgia. Microsoft published a blog post with more details regarding one of this week's patches that affected ASP.NET. The problem here was that Microsoft fixed a behavior in .NET that was often used badly, and that was the ability to disable the ViewState MAC. The ViewState MAC guarantees that the ViewState did not get manipulated by the user. You may have seen the ViewState. The ViewState is sometimes a fairly large blob of data that's sort of being included as a hidden form field. The user, of course, could modify this ViewState, and then if it's posted back, it can actually lead to arbitrary code execution. In order to prevent this modification, .NET supplies a so-called ViewState MAC. This ViewState MAC does essentially sign that ViewState so it cannot be changed by the user. In the past, the setting was optional. It was enabled by default, but a user or a developer could disable this. With this update, developers can no longer disable the ViewState MAC, eliminating this vulnerability. Microsoft started warning very vocally about this problem back in December, but only now decided to actually make this change mandatory in order to give developers time to adjust their applications. According to Microsoft, it's never safe not to use this ViewState MAC, so that's why they decided to go with this step and disable it, even though it may break some applications. In particular, it may break applications that are spread out across multiple servers. If you have an application that's spread out across multiple servers, the problem is that they use different machine keys in order to create that MAC. Now, you can synchronize those machine keys, and that's essentially what you have to do. So don't use the automatically random generated key, but instead pick one and then install it on all of your servers. If you did disable the ViewState MAC, please read the blog post from Microsoft to make sure that you're taking the correct steps to prevent your applications from breaking. And the Global Privacy Enforcement Network, which is actually a network of privacy enforcement authorities from 19 different countries, examined about 1,200 mobile applications in order to figure out if they do provide sufficient privacy disclosures. Turns out, of course, many of them don't do so. In particular, they do not do it before the application is actually installed. About 59% of the applications that were surveyed globally did not provide sufficient pre-installation privacy communications. The other thing that was very common was that the privacy disclosures aren't really readable on the small screens that you typically find on mobile phones or on tablets. And earlier this week, we talked about a leak of possibly 5 million Google Gmail passwords. Well, Google took a closer look at this list, and it looks like only about 2% of the username and password combinations might have worked at some point. Of course, Google by now did lock those accounts, so these passwords will no longer work. Still no real clear indication on where these came from, whether they were just randomly made up. Of course, 2% is something that you may just get right if you try common random passwords and usernames. And then there's an interesting paper looking at some of the Heartbleed aftermath, and in particular, if the vulnerability had been exploited before it was publicly announced. Now, this is always something pretty difficult to figure out, but in this case, the researchers had access to packet data from Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, which actually covers a quite good range of IP addresses, and they had full packet captures for February and March of 2012, as well as for 2013, and then some data from January to April of 2014. They did not see any evidence of any exploitation against the Heartbleed vulnerability until the vulnerability was officially announced. The first actual activity they saw happened on April 8th around 15:18 UTC, which was almost a full day after the public disclosure of the vulnerability. Of course, this is not necessarily indicative of someone else knowing or not knowing about this vulnerability. The fact that they didn't see the vulnerability being exploited against those specific research networks, of course, may indicate that it was only known to a very small group of individuals and only used against some hard, high-value targets, not necessarily against university research systems. Well, and that's it again for today. Thanks again for listening, and talk to you again on Monday.